Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Unchurch Live. Did I say Unchurch Live? Yes, Unchurch Live. I'm on air twice a week, everybody. So I got a text, an instant message on WhatsApp. I heard the countdown to Blog Talk Radio, and I saw the countdown to Be Live. So yes, this is Unchurch Live. It is a no-holds-barred spiritual conversation for the seeker and the skeptic. Thank you for the person who just logged on. Is that Ricky Barrett? Ricky Barrett, if that's you, it's been a minute. Happy to have you log on. I am simulcasting between Blog Talk Radio and Be Live TV. My co-host, Dr. Stephen E. Gardner, is scheduled to call in. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Ricky Barrett, what's up? What's up? Hope you're well. Hope the family is well. I'm going to hit you up in just a moment. Everybody, tonight's topic promises to be provocative, as always. Tonight's topic promises to be infotational, as always. Tonight's topic, which is part two, and I should have stated this on the title of the show, this is part of a three-part series entitled God Talks. This is part two. And tonight's topic is God versus atheism. The fact of the matter is there are multiple camps in terms of the whole theology of belief. There are atheists who believe there is no God. There are agnostics who don't know. And then there are the technical term, family, is theists, those who believe in God. And I want to talk about, I may spend a little bit of time on agnosticism. As a matter of fact, I think I will. I'll start off by talking about atheism. And for those of us who are Christ followers, what I'm about to say may seem sacrilegious. It is actually not. There is a rationale for atheism. That is to say, there is a rationale for those who don't believe in God. That said, I've got to pause, and I got to bring on my co-host. Dr. Gardner, is that you?
That's me. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, Dr. Gardner. I'm just going to bring up your volume a little bit, and if you can bring up your volume just a tad, we want to hear from you. We're glad that you are on tonight, and it is our first show together in, I would say, almost going on 2 months. Thank you for those who are logging on. Dr. Gardner, how are you doing tonight, sir?
I'm doing pretty good. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can. Yes, I can.
And is my volume loud enough for you?
If you can, Doc, bring it up just a little bit. We have people logging on. And let me just make sure our sound is good on Facebook.
Yes,
our sound is good on Facebook. I'm going to bring my volume down just a tad. If you can bring your volume up, that would be good. Give me a little test, doctor.
Now.
That's
can you
better.
Hear me?
Yes, I can. So everybody, doctor, I said this at the beginning that there is a logic. I just got a text. A friend of mine is in Guyana. I just said, doctor, that there is a rationale for atheism. I did not say that I agree with atheism. I will venture to say that there is a rationale for atheism. That is to say that there are people who have logical reasons for being atheists. Doctor, what is your take on that?
Well, I think, can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay. I think what it is that, when people talk about atheism, they talk about the lack of a belief in God or that God doesn't exist. I think that where they're coming from is that something along, I think, in their life happened to where they got turned off by the very idea of God. And usually for the ones that I've talked to that talk about their turnoff is usually people who are turned off with Christianity or the Christian God.
Interesting.
Has that been your experience?
Doctor, I'm just taking a moment to share this on your page and share with a couple of other friends. And I do want you to restate what you said. So let's parse this a little bit. So what I think I hear you saying is that there are people who embrace atheism because they're turned off to Christianity. So because of their rejection of a particular religion, they reject the whole idea of God. So they go from believing in God to not believing at all. Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I see. You know, it's like, I don't hear anybody claiming atheism in reference to like Buddhism or Rastafarianism or Hinduism or any of these other isms, but there's a strong angst against the Christian God.
I'm just, Doctor, I'm processing that, and I do remember our offline conversations. I'm just trying to keep all of that in mind. So it's interesting. In my experience, I'll share a couple of things. And for those who are watching, those who are listening, I'm just being a bit more contemplative tonight. I see in the East, and I don't mean the East as in the Orient. I mean on the East Coast, in particular, the Northeast, and specifically the tri-state area, as I see different posts on Facebook, what I see is a rejection of Christianity for those African-Americans, and I know we have a multicultural audience, so I'm specifying this particular community as the community out of which I come, that they, in becoming more conscious about our history, they then become more negative toward Christianity.
Okay.
I don't see in that a rejection of God. And to your point, yes, they're rejecting the Christian God or the Christian concept of God as the one who sent Christ as the savior of the world. I don't hear in that a subtext of atheism. On the other hand, among the academic community, in particular those who reject the belief in God based upon science, there are a lot of
based
those
upon what?
Of science. So basically, the argument is there's no scientific proof or evidence for the existence of God. Therefore, there is no God. You see what I'm saying? That's
right.
In my experience with atheists, that's the first camp of people or the first tribe of people who give a rationale for atheism. You can't prove the existence of God. So I don't see any scientific evidence. Therefore, there is no God. So you're saying in your experiences, people, so they throw the whole theistic baby out with the bathwater, so to speak. So once they reject the Christian God, they reject God altogether. That's what I think I hear you saying.
Well, what I'm saying is that the context of the definition of atheist or being atheist within the people that I've been around,
yes,
is usually an angst against the Christian God. They don't believe in, not so much they don't believe in God at all, but the only exposure to the idea of God came from a Judeo-Christian environment or response or upbringing.
I like that. That's interesting. So, and I don't know that I'm inventing this term, so they're basically Christian atheists. or atheists, how can I put it? They're anti-Christian atheists. And it's interesting.
Well, that's, you know, you know what that's called, right?
What is that called?
You know what that's called, right? Antichrist.
No, what's that called? Ah, yes,
Antichrist.
Yes. It's, Doc, it's interesting because there are geographical differences. You see, although I've traveled throughout the country and in different parts of the world, my locale for my entire life has been the Northeast. And even in terms of academic preparation, New England, and then here in New Jersey. So my exposure to atheism has been driven more by the academics, if you will, and the intellectual. So here, Be Live family and Blog Talk family, Unchurched family, we're no holds barred spiritual conversation for the seeker and the skeptic. Yes, Ricky Vera, others' lack of faith or knowledge of faith, the number one characteristic of Christianity. Yes. Here's the other piece that for me drives the rationale for atheism. It's human beings' observation of what's going on in our world. So everything from police brutality to human beings' inhumanity to other human beings throughout the world, to famine, to natural disasters. And I'm endeavoring tonight, family, to make this as apolitical as possible. That said, there are people who, when they view the panorama of human existence, say, yo, wait a minute. We have people killing each other, robbing, stealing, identity theft. There's wars, there's famine, there's greed, corruption, Me Too movement, other things. How can there be a God when there are the ills, if you will, that exist in the world? This is the logic. If there was a God, or if there were a God, then that God is all loving and all benevolent, then why would that God allow human suffering? Doctor,
well,
what's your
take
on that?
I mean, if we want to be biblical about it, we got to blame Adam for everything. We
talk
just
about
gotta blame
that.
Adam.
Talk about that.
You know, because, you know, from a Judeo-Christian worldview, and that's just for those in our listening audience that have tuned in to the topic, we want to thank you. For those who want an answer as to human suffering and a loving God that allows human suffering, there are two things that must come into play, and that's free will. And number two is that we got to blame Adam. Now, Scripture informs us that man was made, or Adam, which could represent humanity, was made in the image and likeness of God. So if we talk about likeness and image, we can also talk about characteristics. And one thing from a Judeo Christian worldview is that God is sovereign and he makes choices. And so he gave Adam and Eve a choice. Nobody wants to force their children to love them. Nobody wants to force their children to obey them. But he gave them a particular edict of what he expected from them. But they chose, and they were already informed that when they do eat of this particular fruit, whether eat means consume like you bite an apple, or whether it means participate in something, you know, in, from a metaphorical sense, you're going to die. And so ever since that Adam, from a Judeo-Christian worldview, you know, partook of this forbidden, quote-unquote, fruit, man has had the sentence of mortality attached to him. Therefore, people died from sickness. So sickness came into the world. People died. You know, even science will tell you that they cannot understand how the human body dies when the cells have the ability to reproduce themselves. But for some reason, they in that which is on the earth dies. So that's, from my standpoint, we have to blame Adam as to why there's human suffering, and human suffering has consequence, or it's consequential. What did I do to bring it upon? or, you know, or as someone makes a bad choice and then I get inflicted by it. You know, we can go down a whole lot of reasons as to why human suffering and a loving God. I think that if we believe that God really loves us, then my question would be to those who are skeptic towards him, is what I call the God challenge. In other words, why not try this very God that we talk about? Find out how to get access to him, you know? I mean, you know, the God challenge. So that's my take on it.
Doctor, I appreciate that. I just want to take a quick station break. You're listening to Unchurched Live, a no holds barred spiritual conversation for the seeker and the skeptic. Also, I will say that there are those of us who are Christ followers. I know Ricky Vera is. Brad Howard, I think it's the first time, at least actively, you've liked this show. I appreciate it. Good to see you. I hope you're well. So there are topics that are relevant for the Christ follower. This is more for the seeker and the skeptic. At the same time, as I said last week, for some who are believers, this may give you a rationale for belief in God. Doctor, I appreciate your comments. It's funny. I read a book maybe 27 years ago by Leslie Weatherhead, who was a British, I believe he was a pastor, who wrote a book, Doctor, called The Christian Agnostic.
Christian
Agnostic. And he said the premise of the book is that there are certain things that we have thought through. There are certain things that we are convinced about. Of course, he's talking about it from a Christian perspective. The interesting take that he had, and this is part of the premise of the book, is that there are certain things, if I remember his phraseology correctly, that exist on the spirit, on our spiritual back burner that we are still thinking through. I still think through why African-American men in this country seem to be targeted just for destruction. And that's all I'll say, because I don't want to take this off on a political tangent. I will say, in that part of human existence, I'm a Christian agnostic. I don't know why. And I don't want to give a simplistic explanation for that. And one of the things, Doctor, that Dr. Cornel West said, and Be Live, should I say Unchurched Live family, he said the fundamentalists, he said the flaw of fundamentalism is that fundamentalists make the complex simple. And Doctor, I'll never forget that. Yeah, he said it. Fundamental, and he didn't just mean Christian fundamentalism. Fundamentalism, quote unquote, in all of its theological expressions, across the religious spectrum and across the spiritual spectrum, he said, but the flaw of fundamentalists is that fundamentalists make the complex simple. And I think he's insinuating simplistic. So, Doctor, there's a rationale for atheism. There's a rationale, and this is not an official part of the title here. There's a rationale for agnosticism, and I think sometimes in the faith community, we tend to denigrate agnostics. Now, to me, if I understand agnosticism correctly, an agnostic simply says, "I don't know."
I don't know.
It's a hung jury. We're neither going to acquit. What is the other side of acquit? Find guilty. It's a hung jury. So they're in between. And doctor, maybe they were raised in the church and there's that seedbed of spirituality, but then they look at life and they say, "Oh my goodness, look at this." And they say, I don't know. Or maybe, as you said at the beginning, right, they were hurt by the church, but yet there's that God-shaped vacuum that belief did fill, and yet they're at a moment of crisis and they're like, "I just don't know." And maybe, doctor, this show will help them, if it's only one, to figure that out. At the same time,
I don't know.
You don't know. Stop. So at the same time, doctor, you and I are those who believe in God. Doctor, can you talk about why you believe in God? What is your, the basis of your belief?
Well, I believe in God because I'm gonna tell you what happened. And I grew up. My parents were a strong influence in my life. Okay, I think that the root of any kind of belief or faith system begins in the home. So the origin of my faith in God began in the home. Now, I was the only child, so I didn't have any brothers or sisters, but my cousins and I, we were always close, like brothers and sisters and stuff like that. But my parents, my dad worked hard. My parents wanted me to have a private education. They wanted me to go to a parochial school. They wanted me to have something. I'll tell you exactly what happened. They gave me a choice of where I wanted to go to school. So I'm 5 years old, and a half block from the house, there was a public school, School 56. Some of you that are in Indianapolis know where School 56 is at. At that time, I lived on a street called Martindale. That street is called Dr. Andrew J. Brown now. And then 3 blocks down the road, about a half mile down the road, there was this other school called St. Rita's Catholic Church. And so I said, I want to go to that school down there. Now, I had no idea what they believed. I had none of that. But my parents permitted me to do that. Now, having went to a Catholic school, one of the things is that before you started class, you went to Mass every day. In other words, you went to church every day before you even went to class. The only day that they didn't have it was on Friday. This was every day. And then on Sunday, I'm there at the Catholic Mass at 8 o'clock. But at 11 o'clock, because my parents were Baptists, guess what? I went to the Baptist church. So I'm getting Protestantism and Catholicism for my first 8 years of school. And so my first 8 years, I got both Protestantism and Catholicism simultaneously at the same time. I remember what really fueled my faith in the Christ, or I would say the Christian God, is that I fell down on my knees and prayed by my bed because I was not supposed to go to a end-of-year field trip. I wasn't supposed to go. For some reason, I wasn't supposed to go. And I prayed to God, and I asked Jesus, would he make sure that I get a chance to go? You know, the Lord answered my prayer the very next day. They changed their mind. They said, well, we're going to send you anyway. And so I will never forget that prayer. That taught me that if I talk to God, that God will answer. So I had an awareness that God was not just somebody that we talk about that's going to throw you off into hell because you didn't do this or didn't do that, but that he was a omniscient being that was a reality that does listen to us. And so that fueled my faith in God. And even though I did not always follow the tenets of either the Baptist tradition or even Catholicism, I kind of veered and went to the street route, you know, the church on the street, if you want to look at it from that trans standpoint, and try to do my thing that way. But because I had a strong backbone in my family, in my early family upbringing, praying over meals before, you know, you eat, you know, all of those kinds of things gave me a conscious awareness that God's alive and that he's real. And when he answered my prayer, I was emphatically convinced that this Christian God that sent his son Jesus into the world is someone that's to be reckoned with and someone that I chose to follow later on. I didn't immediately, but I did, you know, give my life to him later on. That is how, you know, how I oriented into a faith in God. Now, let me say something. You know, one of the things that I try not to do is when I talk about my faith in God is talk about it in a way that makes others who are skeptic and are seekers, you know, that they feel small. No, the idea is that we all have a choice. I told you my process. My process came from my home life. That encouraged me to seek out. So as a seeker, I would say, okay, well, why don't I give this God a try? And as an agnostic that I don't know, well, try something that someone else knows something about, and maybe there's a possibility that you may come to a better conclusion about a God you can't see.
Doctor, what I take from what you're saying are two things. One, that you had a faith background.
Had a faith background.
Driven by your family's belief, your family's Christian belief. And then I, just as importantly, and I want to segue to direct some commentary to the seeker and or the skeptic, you had a God moment.
I had a God moment.
When you prayed, you had a God moment. And
you had a God moment. And no one, and the thing about, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. But the thing about it was no one taught me what to say. I just talked to God just like I'm talking to you. And he heard me. And the next day, you know, I went on that picnic. And I attributed to God here in my prayers. Excuse me.
So in having that God moment, from a philosophical standpoint, that's subjective. You know, the intellectuals and the academics like to talk about our subjective experience. And when they talk about our subjective experience, it's really insinuating that it's a non-reality. You see what I mean? It's almost like a dig.
Right.
On the other hand,
okay,
what is objective? And I don't want to take this on some esoteric, you know, very abstract.
Oh my
philosophical
God!
Level.
Here we go.
You know what I'm saying? But you know what is reality? Right. That's it. What I want to say to the seeker and the skeptic is, if you want to be convinced, ask for a God moment. Ask the creator of the universe, higher intelligence, supreme being, to give you a God moment. Because I can say this in terms of my own life. Once you've had a God moment, no one can deny that. And
true.
Then, exactly. So, Doc, I can get philosophical, and I can bring it back home. You know, that's what intelligent people can do. You know, once you've had a God moment, and then once you've had multiple God moments, then that tends to build what I call a faith history. So,
right.
At this point in my life, I can look at the world and I can lament some of the problems of the world. I can, and I do. I still do. Yet I've had enough God moments that my belief in God will never be extinguished.
Right.
Right. Now,
you know, that's good.
Doctor, go ahead.
No, I just said that's good, man. I mean, you know,
Thanks. You've
had enough God moments that your faith in God cannot be extinguished.
No.
That's why I keep saying, give God a try.
God moments. We may need to do a whole show about that, God moments. So, Doctor, I'm just going to take another station break. You are watching and you're listening to Unchurched Live. It is No Holds Barred, spiritual conversation for the seeker and the skeptic. I am your co-host, Finesse, along with my co-host, Dr. Stephen E. Gardner. We are back with Dynamic Duo. And also, I want to invite anyone who wants to call in. If you have a question or comment, you can call in 657-383-0106, 657-383-0106. Tonight's topic is God Talk Part 2, God versus Atheism. So, Dr. I appreciate your Christ-centered, yes, what number, Stephanie Marie? It is 657. I'm going to actually post it on Facebook. It is 657-383-0106. So
did you get that?
I think I posted it. 657-383-0106. Press 1 so that I will know that you want to speak on the air and I'll bring you on. Statement of what I said last week. And I may not get through all four of my points this week as I did last week. And this is more philosophical, to be sure. I think though relevant, and I'll make it as plain as I can, as they say, just make it plain, make it plain. I'm gonna do my best to make it plain. A self-starting universe does not make sense to me. Doctor, I can't even imagine nothingness, but let's just conceive of nothingness. What made the nothing decide to become something? That's the thing for me. You see what I'm saying? What made the nothing decide to become something? I don't know. So for me, God decided to make the nothing something. And then, for those who want to be thinkers, was there ever really nothing when there was God? All right, we're getting another caller. Let me bring the caller on the air.
Hello, my name is Stephanie Marie.
Hello, Stephanie Marie.
Hello. Stephanie. Hello.
Thanks for calling in.
You're welcome. I just I wanted to give a comment on a God moment, and it was too much to put in the text and Facebook, and I thought this is a testimony for me, and this has to be shared. So I'm not afraid to share it, and I hope that it can encourage somebody else. Currently, and for the past several months, I have been in a student teaching program. It's kind of like an internship. And, of course, you cannot work. Now, though I've saved up enough money, being a parent, money goes pretty quickly no matter what you try. And so at my church, we had just spoken a message, or not we, but the pastor, the guest pastor, was speaking a message. And it's in regards to faith, and there was something that we did to give a seed. And so I gave a seed, and before that I asked, I talked to God, and I said, well, God, if you really want to know what I need, I'm going to be honest, I need about $1,000, because I knew that I would have a summer job, but I knew I wasn't going to be able to get a job until student teaching was over. And so I sowed my seed that Sunday. And, of course, I already believe in God. I'm a Christian, but this is a God moment, and this has sealed the deal. I mean, you can't tell me that God is not real after this. So
I like that.
It had to be the Thursday of that week. I remember something was telling me to call a support card. Child support card, and just, you know, and I hadn't been receiving anything or like that for me to even be thinking about it, but something told me, okay, hey, you know, check that card. So, of course, when that's usually the voice of God. That's how it works out in my life. So I checked the card, and there was $1,500 nowhere, and that stuff doesn't happen to me on a normal basis, but, I mean, I remember card, and I was screaming and jumping and crying and all that other kind of stuff. And then on top of that, God turns around, and I am personally selected for a summer opportunity, and I get a raise because I have been there working at the same place for the past, this would be my fourth year. And so that was two God moments in one. He gave me an overflow. And so if I did not believe in God before that moment, that sealed the deal right there.
Now, Stephanie
and that's
Marie,
what I like to share.
I stay, if you would stay on just for a moment, I want you to hear this, and I appreciate your testimony. It's interesting. I like that phrase, God moment, and sealing, more importantly, sealing the deal. And I actually posted that on Facebook in the chat. So we're grateful for, and God moments are very powerful because this society doesn't always encourage belief in God. You know what I mean? And
right.
God has a way to show us, you know, to reveal to us that God is real. You see what I'm saying? Yes, God
yep.
is real. So I don't listen at this stage in my life, Stephanie Marie, Dr. Gardner, I don't care what the atheists say. I don't care what the agnostics
yep.
say. I don't care what the, and with all respect to the conscious brothers and sisters, and I had to block some of them on Facebook because they're just overly negative. You know, being a little critical,
right.
fine, but you know, overly negative, you're going to lambaste Christianity. I had to block them. I'm like, no, there's nothing that they can say to me to deconvince me, if that's the word, that
right.
God does not exist because I've had too many God moments. So, Stephanie Marie, thank you for your unyielding support, and you have a blessed night.
Do the same.
Thank you.
Right. Bye-bye.
Doc.
God moments.
God moments. God moments, sir. You see.
God moments. That's a deal breaker, man. I mean, how can a person, you know, do what she did, or and any of us, and then have a visitation or have an answer that you can correlate with, that only you know that you know that you know that it wasn't because I smoked too much weed or because I took a hit, you know what I'm saying, or anything like that. It's, hey, that was a reality. And that kind of breakthrough, you know, boosts your faith in God. And I think that the reason why some people may be wavering in their faith is because they've never had something to really boost their faith. And the thing is that what helps our faith be boosted is, number one, is what Hebrews says, chapter 11, that faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. And, you know, we talked about that, you know, before, but it goes on to say that he that comes to God, this is in Hebrews chapter 11, and you can read verses 1 through 6, but it says in that context, he or she that comes to God must first believe that he exists and that he is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. So the recipe for God discovery is that I must first believe that God exists and that he is in the business of rewarding those who have taken upon themselves to seek him out.
Yes. Doctor, we have a comment by Ricky Vera. I actually sent him a message on Facebook chat that we would get to his comment. So Ricky Vera writes, the matriarchy of humanity has always influenced the masses. When we are born, our body, mind, and soul are clean and ready to be molded. Home and environment is where we first learn and feel anger, fear, shame, love. Governments create. Yes. He just posted a comment. Ricky, let me just read this comment and I'll get to you in a second. Governments create governing models to benefit the governance agenda since the beginning of time, but Jesus never sided with any kingdom or government. He sided with God. Today we must do the same. Do we align ourselves with Jesus? Too much idolatry today. We are living with the purpose of fueling our convictions and siding with politicians and their human views that expose their humanity. This is why, Michael, you are witnessing what is happening with selected targeted groups. We must remember that Jesus sided with no kingdom, and our job is to do as Jesus would do. Wow. WWJD, what would Jesus do? Ricky Vera, thank you for your comment. Doctor, did you want to respond to that comment?
Yes, I can. I mean, I'm thinking of another, you know, that kind of confirms what Ricky is saying there. The disciples, three of them, had approached Jesus, or two of them, and they, along with the other 10 that were present said that we want, when you come into your kingdom, I want to sit on your right hand and on your left hand. Now, so these are two of the apostles, two of Jesus' main men, wanted preeminence over the other. You know, when you come into your kingdom, you give me a spot on your right and on your left. And he went on to say, Jesus went on to describe about human governments and human kingdoms. And he says that they rule over other people. They lord over other people. That's exactly what he says. He said, but, talking to the Christ follower, talking to those believers, it shall not be so among you. You know, he that desires to be the greatest, let him be the servant. And so the idea was is that Jesus was saying he was making an indictment against a hierarchical kingdom. And the kingdoms of this world are based on hierarchy. And he was basically saying that that's not the way of the kingdom of God. The kingdom of God does not operate from a hierarchical terms. You know, Christ is a center. Think of a wheel with spokes in it. He's in the middle, and it extends out, and we are in a circumference around Christ being in the center. And that was the idea. So that means everybody is on an equal playing field. There are no big eyes, no little U's. If it's a table, guess what? Everybody can sit at the same table, and there are no special spots. Every spot is special, and everyone that comes to the table is special. And so hierarchy, hierarchical kingdoms, power, people striving, wanting to be seen, wanting to be, you know, we've got this whole consumerism today that's part of this poison that's really limiting our real understanding of the God we talk about rather than just trying to use religion as to advance my cause, whether it be political or advance my cause, whether it be some sort of self-recognition. Jesus said it shall not be so among you, that he wanted them to realize that they needed to look up to each other and realize, just like the fingers on a hand, each one needs one.
I think, Dr., coincides with something I'm about to say. Two things. One, Ricky Vera, it's about humility. There's a lot of religious arrogance today. Notice I didn't say Christian arrogance because that would specify too much. There is a lot of religious arrogance. There are Christians who think they're better than the Jews and vice versa. There are Hindus who think they're better than Muslims and vice versa. There are Taoists who think they're better than others. And there's the conscious community within the African American community who thinks that Christians are a cut above idiots. You know what I mean? That we just need help, right? You know what I'm saying? Like, we need some type of what do you call that? Deprogramming. I think that's the right word. I don't believe that, but yeah, I've read some of the comments.
Well, some of the conscious brothers, and I understand where they're coming from, and that is that their indictment against Christianity is an indictment against a religion that was used to subjugate or keep slaves in check. And so that's part of their premise as to why they are really against Christianity, because it was a slave man's religion, as they say. But, you know, if we do all of our history, you find out that Christianity originated in the African continent anyway. But I'm not even going to go there. That's a whole other story.
All but right.
You'll find that some of the early church fathers, they were African. And so Christianity has always had a place in Africa. You know, now what someone may have done that was apart from Africa, when the Western civilization began, it spread through the Roman Empire, you know, that's different. But Christianity is very close to, you want to use the term Fertile Crescent. Well, you look at all those places. Just because someone lives across the street from you doesn't mean that they're not going to talk like you and act like you. I mean, we grew up on the same street. There were places on my block that my parents said, don't go past this particular spot. But the people past a particular spot were no different than I was. So when you look at how close the nations were around the Fertile Crescent, around North Africa, around Egypt, around those kinds of things, they pretty much had a very common language, and just because they were across the street doesn't mean that they were totally different. My point being is that Christianity has always had a place in Africa, and whether someone has used Christianity or used it in a term to subjugate others, that's their evil. But their evil does not take away from my truth. And my truth is the God that I serve has liberated my soul to allow me to see and how to help.
Agreed. And I've had God moments, Doctor. And also, it is from God that I have a purpose in my life. So life is not random. Life is not haphazard. Life is not sporadic. I see a purpose in my life, that there's a reason that I am here, that science can't explain, that goes beyond surviving, that goes beyond eating, okay, drinking, sleeping, working, paying bills, raising my son, enjoying family. To me, those are activities of life. I don't know that that would necessarily denote a purpose in life. And my purpose in life is to do good and live well. You see, to be a servant, to be an activist, to be a philanthropist, to be an entrepreneur, et cetera, to be an investor, all of those things, to bring people to a place of thinking about spiritual things. That's part of my purpose. So I see, and by extension, I see an order in the universe, that there is a system by which all things exist that to me cannot be explained by circumstance. To me, not only can did the universe not self-start, and I didn't say this last week, it did not self-order. There was one who ordered it.
Let me just throw some, and you know, obviously we're not going to get through everything tonight because there's a lot of philosophical assertions being made. But, you know, the thing is that the other thing that I'm going to throw in the mix is this, is that we that are human are bound by time, space, and matter.
Well said.
And we understand things based upon time, space, and matter. That's how we inculcate. That is how we matriculate. That is how we assimilate in this life. It's either by time, it's either by space, and by matter. And if we're going to talk about a God who we cannot see and try to make sense, well, you know, that it was a big bang. Well, maybe it was a big bang. Maybe that was God's voice causing the bang. You know what I mean? We have to grapple with one thing, and that is, let me just borrow something from the writings of the scriptures. And it says that he's Alpha and Omega. He's the beginning and the end. And then in one of the books, and I think it's the last book of the Bible, it says, and time shall be no more. And so if we think about God created the universe, which we do see, governed and controlled and managed by time, space, and matter, then we have to also assume, or it's reasonable enough to assume, that he created time. And so if he created time, you remove time, you have what? No time. Or if you remove time, you have what? Eternity. So.
So then,
like I said, go ahead. I'm throwing it out there. I mean, you know, he created time, so you take away time, it's back to where it was before. We only understand things based on time, space, and matter. So when we talk about an invisible God we cannot see, it is hard for us to get our mind wrapped around something we can't see. Yet, we see the wind, we see the effects of the wind, but I can't see the wind. Huh? I know what direction is coming in, but I can't see it. So is God the same way?
I like that, Doctor. And let me just take our last station break. You're listening to and watching Unchurched Live, a no-holds-barred spiritual conversation for the seeker and the skeptic. I'm your co-host, Finesse, along with my co-host, Dr. Stephen E. Gardner. Tonight's topic is God Talk Part 2, God versus Atheism. And Doctor, the more I co-host Unchurched Live, I don't mind giving myself the handle, if you will, of a public theologian. And I like how we counterbalance each other. And one of the things that you just said that triggered a thought in me that I'd like to share is that God stands outside of time. We don't.
He stands outside of time. Yes.
You see, because God, yes, because God stands outside of time. Let's watch this. God can manipulate time in a way that we can't. Right? He can manipulate time. That is why there are two Greek words in the New Testament for time, at least two. One is chronos, so it is 951. And we stand inside of chronos, but then there is kairos, which is God's time. And because God can stand outside of time or does stand outside of time, God can break into our time to make it time. You see?
Yeah.
So when Stephanie Marie sowed that seed, God said, well, it's time for me to manipulate time to make this God moment happen that no human being could have orchestrated.
Yep.
Only one that stands outside of time can make time happen in God's time. That's why it is said, in God's own time, my change will come.
God's own time.
Yes, in God's. So that God moment is really a kairotic moment.
Oh, Lord.
It is kairotic. Yes, sir. When God's time breaks into human time. So, Doctor, you and I choose to believe. We choose to believe. And in the Old Testament, I believe it's Proverbs, it says, the fool says in his heart, there is no God.
Well, you know, another way of looking at fool, I know fool is a hard word. But another way of looking at the word fool is this. The uninformed says, you know, the uninformed says in his heart there is no God. And so people that do struggle with the idea that God exists, they're just lacking information. They need more information to convince them, you know. And so that's pretty much, I mean, I've heard some really clever arguments. I've heard some really clever, you know, assertions made by people that claim to be agnostic and atheist and things of this sort. And, you know, I have nothing against them as individuals. But the point is that, you know, to not believe in a God, you know, means have I really given this God that I don't believe in a shot, you know? And that's the question. Am I just going to stand staunch and say I don't believe in God and that's it? You can't tell me anything. If we're intelligent enough, we need to be open-minded enough to even entertain the idea, well, maybe let me see if this. Now, if my pride's in the way and I find out this God really does exist, then, I got egg on my face. On the other hand, you know, it's a liberating experience. One of the most liberating God moments a person could have is come to the reality that God exists.
Yes, Doctor, let me read one last comment. It's Frank Morales, as I said in my comments. Frank, it's been a while. I appreciate your support, Dr. Gardner and I. And let me read this. Frank Morales says, there are laws and order in the universe. Who created these laws? God. And he says it with an exclamation point. God. Who decides what is good or bad, or good is good or evil? We say this is good and this is bad. Who determines good or bad? God and God alone. Powerful, Frank Morales. We appreciate
good,
it. And it's interesting. The Hebraic understanding of fool is one who is morally bankrupt. So in the Hebrew mind, and I have to say the Hebrew mind, because saying fool can, as Dr. Gardner alluded to a few moments ago, can seem very offensive. In the Hebrew mind, one is morally bankrupt who says there's no God, because in the Hebraic understanding, that driven by the Old Testament or expressed in the Old Testament, is that morality comes from God. And as Frank Morales, as you said, it's logical. It may seem in this secular society, in this pluralistic society, to say fool is an insult. At the same time, the Hebrew mind said morality comes from God. Ethics comes from God. The Ten Commandments, most notably the 633 laws which make up the Old Testament laws. So if you say there's no God, well, then there's no basis for morality, so you got to be a fool in the Hebrew mind. That said,
wow,
we choose to believe. We choose to believe because we've had God moments, because we see order in the universe, because we see one, we know of one who stands outside of time, who yet influences time, because there is one who sent his son to die for us all that we might live. In spite of what we see in human existence and what we have experienced in life, we still choose to believe.
We choose to believe. We choose to believe. You know, in my closing comment, I must say this. One of the passages of Scripture that has always inspired me, even as a young minister, was Psalm 19. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament sheweth his handiwork. Day unto day uttereth speech, and night unto night sheweth knowledge. That is taken out of the King James Version. The very heavens, the very cosmos, the very stars and the planets we see above declare the glory of God. And so if we doubt that he exists, all we got to do is look up.
Yes, sir. Everyone, this has been a good show. Your man Finesse is back. I appreciate Dr. Gardner standing in for me while I focused on the work, on my 9-to-5, and it's going well. And I'm grateful, Dr. Gardner, for your partnership and for standing in. We're back co-hosting together. Ricky Vera, thank you for your final comment. We're going to end the show, and let me end by saying this. You are and have been watching and listening to Unchurched Live. We simulcast on BeLive TV and Blog Talk Radio. Unchurched Live is no hard spiritual conversation for the seeker and the skeptic. I'm here with my co-host, Dr. Stephen E. Gardner. I'm your co-host, Finesse. We are here every Thursday evening, 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Tonight's topic, God Talk Part 2, God versus Atheism next week. Stay tuned for a show in which we're going to talk about the scientific correlation. And doctor, I remember where I was. I was actually getting ready to fly to Georgia, Atlanta, Georgia, for training. And I saw CNN with Dr. Sanjay Gupta. There is a scientific link between belonging to a community of faith and living a long life. So everybody, as we say, as we end the show, everyone, one love, peace. Have a good night.
Bye-bye. God bless.
God bless.